Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm looking at the results of the recall in California yesterday, and wow, polling not even close. Originally, they said this was kind of a toss-up. Uh-oh, Newsom could get recalled. We could end up with a crazy guy as the governor of California. Somebody who believed that we'd have to give white landowners in the South reparations, which is weird. But yeah, there he was. He was going to be the next governor. And there was all this talk. It was possible. It was possible. And then the polling came back. Well, maybe not so much. It'll be close. But 64% that said, no, we don't want this governor recalled. In fact, it was even higher than the vote that he got in 2018, which was somewhere around, I guess, like 62%. So he actually performed better in the recall. So, hey, all of the moneyed interests who are pushing for this, congratulations. You made him evidently even more popular. So good job. And here to share some thoughts on the results of yesterday's recall in California, I've asked Eve Levinson to come talk with us. She's the National Youth Advisor for Grassroots Democrats HQ. Their website, grassrootsdems.org. Eve, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me on. We're really excited as a Californian, as somebody who works at the Grassroots Dem HQ. The results of yesterday are really exciting and show really how much the grassroots has worked, but also hopefully a good sign for the public support of Democratic policies. So thanks so much for having me on to discuss it.
No, I think it's important. And look, I was happy to see the results that came back. I wanted a big, decisive victory, especially in these things where you don't get a lot of turnout. I thought it was important because I knew the Republican base would be all lathered up in the panties to run out there and throw the guy out. So it shows me that the Democrats were pretty pumped up as well to get out and vote for this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that what we saw in the polls is that sort of like 2 weeks ago, there wasn't necessarily that same excitement and support. But then we really saw a full court press from everybody from the grassroots and the California American Party, who had been working this long time. The Grassroots Dem HQ had been doing phone banks and had really shifted over most of our operation away from the general focus to focus on this. We really saw in the last 2 weeks a sort of national effort and push that I think really made a big difference in making sure that people knew that they needed to go out and vote, because what we know is that there, of course, are more registered Democrats in the state of California than Republicans. But I think the early polls really show why that voter engagement is so important. If a voter doesn't realize an election is happening or why the election is so important, that's when we're at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is such a decisive victory that, you know, not even the Trumpkins can go, oh, my God, they cheated. Oh, my God, they stuffed the ballot box. Dead people were voting. And I expected to wake up to that this morning.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the reality is when you win by, I think right now it's still a 2-1 margin, that you really can't have an instance of the claims of voter suppression really can't be there. I think that's why it's so important, not just that we won, but that we won by a landslide, because this wasn't just about California. This was also about showing support for science, showing support for vaccines, and also making sure that we really can move beyond this and not have to waste any more time or money with any sort of dispute over whether or not the election was valid. And I think that that's the reality, that this recall should have never happened. Newsom showed that he won by more than he won in the original race. And now it's time to push our grassroots efforts back to 2021 and 2022. The reality is that the Grassroots Dem HQ made 490,000 phone calls, sent 223,000 postcards, knocked on 5,100 doors, and engaged 3,500 volunteers. And that's incredible. But also now we need to get back to focusing on keeping Virginia blue in 2021 and keeping the Senate and the House in 2022.
Right. No, absolutely. Without question. How much do you give Greg Abbott credit for the win there in California? Because I got to be honest, the Texas rapist Bill of Rights seems to have generated a lot of activity here. How much played into California? And I don't actually know how it played out there. That's why I'm asking. How much of that played into what you saw there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we would have won in California whether or not that had been the case. I do think, though, the reality is that reproductive justice is a really important issue for so many people, so many young people like myself. I'm 21. I think that this was sort of the first instance in which we saw how much Roe v. Wade is at stake, which hasn't really been a reality in our lifetime before. We obviously, it was an issue. It was a talking point of the 2016 election. It's something that made me want to get out and do everything I could to support Hillary Clinton. However, I think that there's a difference between when you actually see that reality and when you see the court ruling that way. So I think definitely, I think everything played a role in it. But I think what we saw from the exit polls is that COVID was the primary factor that drove voters to the polls on all sides of the aisle. And obviously it drove more of our peoples to the polls because there were more Democrats to go and vote and support to keep Newsom.
Right. So you'd maybe, would you agree that maybe DeSantis in Florida was more responsible than Abbott then? Because
I mean, I don't want to ever credit a Republican with our successes. I think that we win because we have the better policies and because we have the better grassroots game as well.
No, that's where I was going to go with this, because the policy of, well, we're not going to do anything and we'll just let people die, that doesn't seem to be really popular.
No, it isn't. And I think that's what we saw. And what we saw, especially when I was doing these phone banks, was that our volunteers weren't just from California. There were people from all over the country because everybody was so concerned about what was going to happen, which as a Californian was kind of something nice to see, as somebody who has spent so much time working and volunteering for campaigns in other states, to sort of see that grassroots energy come back, because we knew that this was a referendum on science, on Democrats' response to COVID, and we showed up both in volunteers nationwide and voters in California.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Now, going forward, I mean, I'm hoping that this is a springboard to bigger and better things, because we're going to need it in 2022, especially if we don't get anything done on the infrastructure front, which the fear is the circular firing squad is being convened. But we need the youth vote. We need the young people to come out and vote in numbers like they haven't in years past. And I know your organization is working to do that. So how is that going? How are you working in that world?
Yeah, definitely. I will just say, I think on the infrastructure point, I still have hope. I think that, you know, Speaker Pelosi and the other leaders really have shown that they are good to having this dual approach. So I think we will get the infrastructure package, and that'll be something that we can tout to voters in 2022. But the reality is, no matter how much or how little is accomplished, we still need to keep our majorities. And so specifically, what we're working on right now in 2021 is a program to contact 90,000 young voters ages 18 to 29 in the state of Virginia to ensure we keep the House of Delegates and that we elect Hala Ayala to be the first ever woman of color elected statewide in Virginia, and also ensure that we keep the Virginia governor's house blue by reelecting Terry. And so that's really what we're working on, working with groups in Virginia, working with another youth group called Blue Future to be able to contact those 90,000 young voters, make sure they're registered to vote, make sure they turn out to vote, and make sure they vote for Democrats in those key districts. And then we hope that once that works out, that we can replicate the program in the Virginia congressional districts in 2022, in addition to expanding to Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. So that's a focus. And I think that method sort of having youth-led programs, targeting voters in specific districts, and also reaching out to them both with on the issues they care about, is really how we're going to make a difference in reaching voters where they are, which young voters, which tends to be on college campuses, obviously. So traditional on-campus organizing is important, but also on social media and also through text. We need to invest in texting young voters, because value is a lot of young voters are less likely to answer their phones. We should still call them, but when a campaign or a group is investing in texting, I think that targeting that towards young voters is definitely one of the best ways to invest that resource.
Yeah, you got to reach people where they are. I'm an old school organizer. I still believe face-to-face, shaking someone's hand, having a conversation is
absolutely
the best way. But when talking to my kids, I actually text them.
Yeah.
We're in the same house. It's basically sitting next to each other, and I still text them. Because it's the world that we now live in, right?
Yeah. Well, and also a lot of young voters like me, if you went and you tried to canvass me at my house, I probably wouldn't be there because I'm in school right now on the other side of the country. But if you text me, my phone number is going to stay the same as whatever is in the voter file. So I think that that's really important when you think about how to engage young people where they are.
So what does your generation think of, you know, like here in Pennsylvania, our state Senate just decided that they want to subpoena all of the voting records for every voter in the state. They want to compile all this information on everyone because there was all of these nefarious activities that they kept throwing out and the courts kept throwing out. What's the thought on some of these outlandish claims of all this voter fraud and voter suppression that are being made?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that what we know is that Those claims of voter fraud are so far and few between that they really rarely happen. And what the real issue is voter suppression. I think that that's why it's so important that we get legislation passed. I'm a big proponent of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the For the People Act. And I think that if what can get through the Senate, if what can get through the Senate is the new compromise that came out today with Joe Manchin's support, then that's definitely better than nothing. Obviously, if there's a way to get the more sweeping reforms through, that's what I prefer. But time is really running out to be able to get that legislation passed, to have it be able to be in effect by the 2022 election. But I think the larger issue than so-called cases of voter fraud is really the voter suppression that we see that's targeting marginalized groups, communities of color, young people, disabled voters, the voters that we know are really the ones who are most affected by the policies that are being considered and that the elections make a difference for.
Yeah, and going after poor people. I mean, it's the way that Republicans have identified and how they can, the only way that they can win is to make sure. And this isn't new. I mean, this goes back to 1980 and Paul Weyrich, you know, saying, you know, we don't want everybody voting. We want, you know, our people to vote, but not them. And they've moved policy, heaven and earth, to get to the point where they've been able to do that. You know, starting in 2000 when you had Al Gore, who won the election, you know, basically having that taken from him because Florida decided voting while black is a crime. But in going forward with the legislation, because here's the problem, and we got a big problem. It's never getting 60 votes. It's never going to get past cloture. And I don't see an appetite with the Democrats to undo the filibuster. How do you see this getting through?
I mean, I think that we have seen some inclination of that. I think that there's a possibility of there being a carve out in the filibuster. And I know that we've seen some reports of that happening. So I think that it's about, we need to keep on pushing for that on the legislative side, but we also need to plan. And it's now the organizing for 2022 has already started. And we need to just sort of do both at the same time. And obviously not everybody can do 100% of both at the same time, but it's important to be involved in at least one, I think. So, I mean, I think the reality is, I think it's unlikely we get 60 votes. That being said, I think a carve out might be more likely than a total abolition of the filibuster.
So where do you find yourself on the filibuster? Do you think we should abolish it? Think we should be carving it up and putting, you know, holes in it like Swiss cheese? How do you see that?
I personally think that I would not be too upset if the filibuster went away. That being said, I understand that it's not necessarily the most realistic thing at this time. I think that what's most important is getting the legislation passed that's going to support the people of America. And so I think that whether that's a carve out, whether that's abolishing it, whichever way we can get help to the American people as quickly as possible is the most important. And sometimes that's going to be pushing certain bills through reconciliation.
Yeah, I've been saying for a while we should be pushing more reconciliation bills. Congress has the ability to pass 13 budget bills a year. In fact, they're supposed to. They used to. They used to have 13 individual budget bills, and they used to pass them. They haven't done it in a number of years. But for me, I think that's 13 bites at the apple to take a lot this big plan and move a lot of little ones that are a lot easier to message and a lot easier to digest to get people behind. Because look, this $3.5 trillion spending plan is very popular when you start telling people what's in it. When you stop demonizing it and saying, oh, it's just wasteful spending, that's actually investments in communities and people getting educations and your generation not being saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And I think that that's what hopefully we will see come out of the budget discussions that are happening. But again, I think that while we're pushing for these legislative fights, it's also really important that we are keeping our eye on the elections, because the reality is there are no off years. And that's both because there are things like recalls that come up and off year elections in Virginia, but also because working for elections is a year round activity. You need to have the sustained organizing and the sustained voter contact. You can't just come in the 3 months before.
Yeah, see, here's the thing, and this is where there's part of me that goes, I wish we could return to the days where elections were just for 3 months. I think a lot of people are burnt out at the constant, the 24/7, 365 election cycle that the day that you get elected, you're running for re-election. In fact, I've got friends in Congress who tell me, you know, the day that they get elected, they're raising money for the next election, which takes so much time away from them doing the kind of work that they need to do. And there's my set, you go, I wish we could have 3 months, duke it out for 3 months, beat each other bloody if we have to. And then election day, let's get some stuff done.
Yeah. I mean, I think, though, there's also a part of organizing that's not necessarily just solely electoral organizing, but it's about building power within communities. It's about ensuring that folks are trained up, that you're working on whatever that community needs. And so I think that what we saw is a lot of Democratic campaigns at the end of the coronavirus were not really focused necessarily getting out the vote, but were focused on ensuring that people had what they needed, supporting mutual aid. And so I think that when I say like year-round organizing, that's also what that includes. But then I think that when there are Republican distraction tactics that come up, like the recall campaign, that really puts a rent in that sort of more sustained organizing and the investing in those communities that are both important electorally, but also important because all communities and all people are important.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because I look at this recall as this was busy work. This was the rich people of this country going, let's throw a little wrench into the system. Let's make people spend resources and spin their wheels to try and defend Newsom, knowing that I got to believe they knew they weren't going to win. But this was about stopping progress. This was about giving Biden a black eye, potentially. This was about gumming up the system just enough to, cause a little chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's exactly right. This recall election, we knew that Democrats controlled California. We still know that Democrats and Californians want Newsom. But the reality is it was a distraction tactic. And so now what we have to do is we need to get back to focusing on the legislative fights and looking to the Virginia election is less than 2 months away. That's very soon, right around the corner. And we need everybody who put all their attention in California, who phone banked, who donated, who wrote letters, who knocked doors. We need that same effort now to be put towards the Virginia legislative cycle.
And how can people help? I know going to your website, grassrootsdems.org.
I would say go to our website, grassrootsdems.org. The HQ is going to be, in addition to the youth program I discussed, also be working directly with the coordinated campaign and different House of Delegates campaigns. So there will be opportunities for phone banking and texting and postcarding from around the country, in addition to opportunities to support canvassing for folks who are in the area as well. So the website, definitely the best place to go. And I also will be definitely putting out a lot about that on my social media. As a college student in DC, I think it's really important that we go and put our boots on the ground and knock on those doors in Virginia as well.
We got a lot of work to do. And what kind of things from Pennsylvania, from Michigan, from Alaska, what can people do to help real quick?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, folks who have the ability to support monetarily, that's always helpful. But also there's texting voters, writing postcards and notes to voters, and calling voters. The best form of voter contact that folks can help with from out of state is really that calling voters. And that's, you're going to see a lot more volunteer opportunities coming from the Grassroots MHQ for Virginia in the coming days.
Good stuff. Grassrootsdems.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Eva, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Good stuff. Again, the website, grassrootsdems.org. We'll get some links out on how you can help keep Virginia. And maybe we can push Virginia to undo their horrible no rights at work agenda and get rid of right to work laws there. Just my thought. Love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break.
Right. Remembering back. That united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.